This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to New Books in Sociology, a podcast channel of the New Books Network. I'm your host, Ritparna Padkiri, and today I'm going to be in conversation with Laura Menin. Laura Menin is an associate researcher in the School of Global Studies, Anthropology at the University of Sussex. Previously, she was a postdoctoral fellow at the Department of Sociology and Social Research and the Department of Human Sciences at the University of Milano Bicocca and a research fellow at the Zentrum Moderner Orient in Berlin. A social anthropologist, she has worked in Morocco and Italy on love and intimacy, migration and border regimes, political violence, forms of emerging cultural production in Morocco, and more recently on racism and post-slavery. She has published her work in HAU, Journal of Ethnographic Theory, the Middle East Journal of Culture and Communication, Contemporary Levant, and the Journal of the Royal Anthropological Institute. Today, we are going to discuss her new book, Quest for Love in Central Morocco, Young Women and the Dynamics of Intimate Lives, which has been published by Syracuse University Press in 2024. Laura, I welcome you to this conversation and thank you so much for making time.
Thank you to Ritparna for inviting me for this interview. Thank you very much.
Right. So could you first talk a little bit about the context in which this book is located?
Yes, absolutely. So the context of my research is a medium-sized town located in central Morocco. This agricultural region has developed transnational connection to southern Europe and Italy and Spain in particular since the 70s. Migrant remittance and the investment in land, construction, agriculture and local business have contributed to the rapid growth of the town and to its economic dynamism. The outside of migration, as it is described there and named there, is a very central dimension of the everyday life in the region. But the outside world has also intruded into people's imaginations through the spread of digital televisions that makes available different image of intimate and conjugal life. And together with television culture, the internet and the mobile phone have all become integral parts of youth sociality. And since the 90s, cyber cafes have appeared in every corner of the town, and now people have internet on their smartphones. So just to give you an idea, internet users were about 36 million in 2023, which means a penetration rate of 98% of the population. And so satellite television and digital technologies are all central dimensions of an underground youth culture of love and dating that has developed in urban Morocco in connection with the increased female school attendance and the postponed age of marriage. At the same time, in the past few decades, Islamic revival as promoted in the town the ethical reform of religious subjectivity and sociability, as well as alternative imagination of social and intimate lives. Unlike the illiterate and poorly educated mothers, the generation of women in this book have attended university and high school, so they experience new freedoms in the definition of their life trajectories, but also encounter moral and existential anxiety, which are connected with these generational changes. So in my book, I trace how they negotiate new desires and also contradictions in the making of their intimate lives.
Right, right. So Laura, could you also talk a little bit about the methods that you have used in your work?
Yes. I spent about 14 months in Morocco between 2008 and 2014. In particular, I have lived with families in two different neighborhoods of the town. The first one is a lower middle-class neighborhood, which was born out of the inward migration of union civil servants and school teachers during the 60s and 70s. The second neighborhood is a low-income setting that originally took shape as a squatter settlement for those people who arrived in the town in search of a better life. So they are different, but also share a kind of lower income situation. And within and beyond the neighborhood where I lived, I was able to create the most important ties with women and girls. Father and brothers and maid cousin and uncles too, of course, were important presences in during fieldwork. But it was with women and girls that I could share my daily routines and leisure activities, following them during their daytime, like, you know, watching television, surfing on the internet, promenading in the city center, and, you know, also meeting friends and lovers. But spending time with them, I could get access to their viewpoints on family ties, love, and marriage. Right from the beginning, I found myself involved in conversation about love and love trouble as well. At the same time, I collected data to surveys regarding family life arrangement, age of marriage, family composition, etc. I also carry out in deep interviews and informal conversation with women of different generation and social backgrounds. And of course, there's recorded interviews and data were very important because they provided information on the formal and informal dynamics of marriage proposal, courtship rituals, and wedding celebration and ceremonies. However, I feel that the most important things I learned come from sharing time with the girls with whom I could build up relationships of closeness and friendship and trust.
Right. Sorry, I was muted when I was speaking. I didn't realize it. Well, yeah.
No problem.
So, in your book, you also talk about love becoming an ethnographic as well as a theoretical tool. So could you please expand a little bit on that?
Yes, of course. This is because when I began this research, especially in 2008, 2009, there were only a few studies on love in anthropology, especially in the MENA region. The gap between the presence of love in my fieldwork and the historical death of ideas of love in central Morocco on the one hand, and the scarcity of love in anthropological literature on the region was striking for me. In the past decade, of course, the situation has changed a lot, and a number of scholars have gone documenting love dynamics in this region. So when I began, I was not really interested in tracing the specific shape that love takes in Morocco. I mean, I did not want to take for granted what love itself was for my interlocutors. Instead of considering love as a universal experience, as part of a literature actually does, I try to contextualize the shifting meanings and emotions and affects and expectations as well associated to love across generations. So love itself in this way became an ethnographic and theoretical question. I began by asking questions to girls and women, oftentimes also very stupid question and banal question like, what is love for you? And each one would give me very different answers. But I realized that talking of love was often the point of departure for addressing other dimension of life that my interlocutor themselves considered important. For example, the anxieties about the conjugal future, but also how to combine a family and a career, how to pursue a love relation without hurting the sentiments of the people they love and their family. So as I was trying to understand what love meant for my interlocutor, I realized that this question opened up other bigger questions.
Right. So you also, of course, bring out a lot of these narratives of love, unfulfilled promises of marriage, family's opposition, and men's deceit. So what role do these play in Morocco?
We can say that narratives of passionate love, of family's opposition and men's deceit are very powerful trope in the oral tradition and also in literary imaginations in Morocco. But what I found is that they were also actually part of the secret dynamics of premarital love, as they were narrated, of course, and experienced by the young women and girls I met. Young women, for example, would talk passionately of love, but also connected physical and emotional intimacy to the dangers of man's deceit and the loss of respectability. In other words, the quest for love is, for these girls, a very ambivalent experience. We can say, for example, when this generation of women compare their experience with that of their mothers and grandmothers, they are aware of the major freedoms they enjoy in their social and intimate life as well. I mean, they can work, they can study, they get out and meet friends. But at the same time, they experience new contradictions and tensions in their lives, like being highly educated, unmarried, and with unstable jobs. So this narrative also points to the hopes and frustrations, as well as to continuities and ruptures in the gender dynamics with men, and also in the imagination of gender construction of both men and women in the society where they live.
Right. And you were also talking about how questions on love would open up, you know, things about others, aspects of their lives. So what is love for these young women?
Yes, as I said, love is a very central experience considered absolutely important and necessary in a marriage. But at the same time, it's a very ambivalent experience. Of course, there are some women who seek to be very pragmatic and seek for a good marriage, but others idealize love as an elective union between two individuals who are bounded by love. At the same time, in real life situations, they experience love as a battleground between competing powers, desires, affects, and also social expectations. So some families, of course, they support a choice of love, and generally unmarried couples seek to combine romance and parental approval. But in any event, there can be tension between marital love and family love. And in addition to family opposition, girls often evoked a gender imagination of young men as potential deceiver who just want to pass time with them or to get their trust in order to obtain a sexual encounter without serious intention. So there is a lack of trust, and trust is very difficult to be built. So a love in this sense becomes a problem because it is precisely within intimate relationships that young women experience the tension between new desires and visions of intimate lives and the enduring gender imagination and construction that shape the sense of self, as well as the gender dynamics in the context where they live, which is also a context of economic uncertainty. And this make also the project of a marriage a very precarious one.
Right. Also, do you think love can be a site for agency and imagination for young people?
Yes, absolutely. This is actually a key idea in my book. And it is precisely that young women quest for love goes beyond the search for the loved one. The quest for love becomes a quest for the self and for the different modalities of intimate exchange. And this is because love is central in the performance of the gendered selves. On the one hand, love itself is shaped in sexual and gender politics, which are at the very core of the emergence of the gendered subjectivity and also heteronormativity. On the other hand, the quest for love exceeds the normative orders that produce it and can even open up a space for self-exploration and reflexivity. So these entail both intimate experimentation in intimate relationships, and as well as relational uncertainty, and which results from the ongoing redefinition of gendered selves and conjugal expectation in this region. So importantly, what is at stake in the quest for love is not only the making of the gendered selves and intimate relationship, but also the imagination of social and political life. Young women actually engage in a quest for love, but also to rethink their society, to discuss the power that they feel they shape their intimate lives, but also the society in which they live.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Right. So what kind of intimate exchanges are taking place in secret and, let's say, public dynamics?
Yes, this is also a very central question. In central Morocco, marriage has a strong public dimension. In contrast, premarital love is experienced in the social, what I call the social sphere of secrecy, because they are somehow institutionalized spheres of secrecy. And this is because, as happened in many other societies, sex and romance on the one hand, and marriage and family on the other hand, are associated with diverse types of affective, ethical, and pragmatic reasoning. Marriage is not just the private choice of two individuals who are tied by love, but it is considered a very focal event in people's lives. Both for girls and boys, marriage marks the entrance into social adulthood. So parents are not necessarily in opposition, I mean, to be set in opposition to love marriage. And as I said, I mean, couples often seek to combine both romance and kin approval, but marriage remains an important family business that needs the validation by the two families. So dating is also considered unacceptable for good girls, and especially in the poor and lower middle class neighborhood where I carry out a large part of my research. Young women seek to navigate these tensions between competing desires and morality, to skillful disguising and also disclosing. However, I mean, I do not consider silence and secrecy as a way to challenge the norms, but rather as gendered social practices that allow for specific modalities of inhabiting the norms. Because as long as it remains secret, the transgression of the norms opens fundamental spaces for freedom and agency. And this is especially true when it comes to the desire for premarital love and sex. But secret love relationships are just space of possibilities whose outcomes remain oftentimes unpredictable. I mean, they become very successful marriage made appear as traditional marriage, or they can last for years and then end or become social scandal if the girls, for example, get pregnant.
Interesting. I also have to ask you about how the religious vocabulary of destiny is used to make sense of twist in intimate lives. Is Islam seen as a solution for troubles that one may encounter in love?
Yes. I mean, my interlocutors often mobilize the Islamic vocabulary of destiny to make sense of fate, love, and misfortune. On one hand, the girls claim love and choice in marriage decisions, but they also stressed that the final outcome of a relationship is not simply a matter of personal choice and individual will, because major events in people's lives, including marriage, are connected with divine destiny written by God since the beginning of life. And this is, of course, a very Islamic, important belief, idea. And talking of destiny for these girls was also a way to emphasize the limits of individual agency. I mean, a way to point to the unpredictability of intimate relationships and to the fundamental human condition of being confronted by force and power that are far beyond personal control and even understanding. I mean, sometimes the encounter with destiny become a transformative event that makes girl deeply aware of the need of God's, of God's guidance, also in matter of love and marriage.
Right. Also, what is the space for choice and freedom in a world where personal desire and intentionality encounter these greater powers?
Yes, evoking destiny does not equate to fatalism or passivity. The idea that people attain in life what God has decreed for them is always combined with an insistence on free will and responsibility. And this perspective, which is part of a common sense idea in central Morocco, also reflects mainstream Sunni tradition. And it is based on the idea that God grants human free will and responsibility for the action, and the action will be judged. So young women do not consider themselves passive, but always seek to actualize their hoped for conjugal future and criticize those men who passively surrender to adverse situations instead of seeking to reverse them. In other words, my interlocutors think that there is a space for choice and freedom, but there are also things that cannot be decided. And in this perspective, freedom is the possibility to act within the limits set by God. I mean, within the limits set by both mundane and transcendental power, rather than the capacity to overcome the limits. And I think this insight is very important theoretically, because it shows a relational perspective that recognizes the complex texture of human and non-human agencies and powers about which people strive to give their lives the direction they desire, they want.
Interesting. You know, I also want to know a little bit about the relationship between love and modernity. we began talking about internet users and, you know, for smartphone users. So how is love explored in technological platforms and devices?
Okay, there is a chapter in particular in which I seek to explore girls' search for love to internet platforms and mobile phone. And this was something which I did not plan. But when I was on field work, I actually realized that internet platforms and mobile phone were really, really central to the dynamics of premarital love. My interest, however, is not so much on the internet and the mobile phone as a specific media, as in, I mean, the intimate and social dynamics that the different appropriations of this media make possible. I seek to trace the emergence of new modalities of intimacy and love relationship mediated by digital communication channels. As some scholars argue as well, I mean, digital technologies enable new possibility for the transgression of the gendered, social, and religious norms. Although I do agree with this point, in my book, I focused instead on the ways in which young women seek to combine a quest for love with a quest for the affirmation of the moral gendered self. I mean, digital communication technologies have expanded significantly the social sphere of secrecy, but this does not necessarily entail moral transgression or distance from marriage. On the contrary, the religious girl I met also used digital technology to craft a chaste love that help them to avoid the dangers of physical intimacy, and which they consider an Islamic avenue to marriage. And to come to the question of modernity, of course, love is not at all a modern idea in North Africa and the Middle East, but the convergence of love and marriage is indeed a modern phenomenon. Historians, for example, show that debate about love marriage in the 19th and 20th centuries became part of a broader project of social reform and modernization of gender relations in the Muslim society. Anthropologists as well have tried to explore the way in which people engage with love as a particular modality of inhabiting modernity in both colonial time and the contemporary context of globalization. So the encounter of love, choice, and marriage has a long history, and this history reflects North African and Middle Eastern engagements with modernity. Nevertheless, in my book, I do not consider love just in terms of modernity, but I try to trace how the quest of love opens up an horizon for transformation, which is at the core of alternative imaginations of modernity itself. I seek to understand what modern love means according to different understandings of modernity. Modernity can be imagined as a moving forward along the line of progress, or as a moving back toward the prophetic example. And this is, of course, has important implication in the way loves and intimate relationships can be conceived. So social media, I feel, in many cases help women young religious women to build up a relationship which they consider halal, we can say, permitted according to the idea of modernity as part of their being a religious person.
Right, right. So last question, Laura, how do you think your book contributes to the existing literature on love and sexuality? Any comments about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think to make three main points. First, I foreground the productive and creative dimension of young women's engagement in a quest for love. My argument basically is that love is shaped by broader social, economic, and political transformations. And this argument is, of course, not new. But what it is important is that at the same time, love itself is a powerful trigger of social, intimate, and imaginative dynamics. So I try to track these dynamics which are triggered by love. And my second point is that love is central to the making of gender subjectivity, and heteronormativity as well, because through the language and the imagination of love, girls build themselves as a gender subject, but also reconsider and think through societal norms. They discuss the place they occupy in the family and society, and also reflect on the working of power within the intimate and affective world. So love is not only the intimate side of the reproduction of gender and power, but it also the side from where girls can imagine different relational modalities of femininity and masculinity, as well as, I would say, alternative social order. My third point is that I have tried to conceptualize love not just in terms of gender and sexuality, nor of freedom and choice or engaging with modernity, although all these are really crucial aspects of my analysis. On the contrary, I have theorized love as a quest that open up huge ethical, existential, and even cosmological questions, and allow my interlocutors to work out their relationship with those questions. And in this sense, the idea of love as a quest brings into focus the dimension of gender and danger and pleasure of unknowing and discovery, and navigation, experimentation, and these are all dimensions that ultimately makes love a journey of learning and personal growth. And in a broader level, love is also crucial in thinking through changes and debate in Morocco and in the Middle East more broadly.
Thank you so much, Laura, for taking us through the book and having this conversation where you have discussed theoretical and methodological aspects of your newly published work. I thoroughly enjoyed reading it, and it was an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you once again.
Thank you very much.